report that I've received. This actually is an article from The Atlantic magazine. The point of no return. The point of no return. And it is the conviction of the writers of this magazine article that the world and the United States and Israel are at the point of no return with regard to Iran. It is a huge challenge for the Obama administration, writes The Atlantic magazine. And if things remain on the current course, an Israeli airstrike will unfold perhaps within the next 12 months. One day next spring, the Israeli National Security Advisor and the Israeli Defense Minister will simultaneously telephone their counterparts at the White House and the Pentagon to inform them that Benjamin Netanyahu has just ordered roughly 100 of their jets and other aircraft to fly toward Iran to destroy their nuclear sites. Fascinating times, very threatening times. Aren't you glad that we have a God that we can trust in? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path, even in the midst of these trying times. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of the book, The 10 Things You Need to Know About Islam, your gift of $11 or more to Save America Ministries. Get it on our website, saveus.org. Thanks.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to be reminded of the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Jim Beers, who has an amazing story to tell you. He worked for many years with Fish and Wildlife, and he's going to be talking about the re-wolving of America. Not the rewilding of America, but the re-wolving of America. Hi, Jim. How are you doing tonight?
Just fine. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I want you to tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and why you are concerned and why they should be concerned about some of the policies of the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, I worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for 30 years, actually 33 years. And I had a wildlife degree when I went to work for them. I had been an officer in the Navy, and I had worked for the Utah Game and Fish Department. And I worked for them in various capacities, from wetlands biologist in North Dakota to law enforcement officer in Minnesota and a law enforcement officer in Grand Island, Nebraska, and in New York City. And then I went into Washington, D.C. for, I guess, about 28 years. And I was a wetlands or wildlife biologist in there and a law enforcement officer. Then I was a congressional fellow for a year. And I came back out and was in the refuge system as the operations chief, which meant I had all of the law enforcement and maintenance kind of activities and research activities under me in the Washington office for the whole system. And then I was transferred over to the federal aid program, which is the program that oversees the collection of excise taxes on arms and ammunition and fishing tackle. And all of that money, which is usually somewhere between $600 to $800 million a year, is all earmarked for state fish and wildlife agencies to use for hunting and fishing programs in the states. And there's a lot of requirements for what they have to do as far as matching the funds and getting only certain kinds of projects. They can't use the money for a lot of frivolous things or for law enforcement work. And I spent my years there, and then I got sort of unceremoniously booted out by the new age biologists that were coming in who were not managers and were, in my view, very ignorant about wildlife. And I don't say that to belittle them, but their whole philosophy was to protect everything, to stop hunting, stop fishing, to, along with that, stop the grazing of public lands by livestock, to cut back on the number of big game animals out there as a way to do away with hunting. And they worked with people that were against forestry and the use of timber, and that spotted owl is probably comes to mind. They worked with fisheries people to do things like call a snail darter, a small fish in Tennessee, endangered, to stop a big dam. And they really came after me because I was spending the last couple of years traveling back and forth to Europe, trying to get Europe to back down on a law they had passed in the European Union as a result of American and international environmental and animal rights groups giving money and lobbying the European Union politicians. They had banned the import of furs into Europe that were taken in countries who wouldn't ban the leghole trap. That meant they would put trapping out of business in the United States and Canada and Russia. And that's a big, important tool for managing fur-bearing animals in the State Fish and Game Department, so throughout the state. So I was representing them, and the new people who came to the Fish and Wildlife Service did not like that kind of thing. So they tried to get me fired and then tried to force me to retire. And finally, I stayed home for about 10 months, and during that time, I testified before Congress twice about the theft of about $65 million from those excise taxes by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to introduce wolves and open up a big office in California.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay. Well, did they actually steal the money, or did they simply just put it into places where it wasn't supposed to go?
I think steal is the correct word, because that money, by law, can only be spent by the U.S. or by the state fish and game agencies. And it can't be used by the Fish and Wildlife Service, who's the only money they could take out of it was a small amount to administer the funds. And when Congress refused to introduce wolves, give them any money for that, and also refused to give them money to open a new office in California, because the Republicans at that time, this was in the early Clinton administration, the Republicans had taken over the House of Representatives, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service just decided to take that money that was earmarked for the state fish and wildlife agencies, and over a period of 2 years, it was shown by an audit by the General Accounting Office that money was diverted into the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and used to trap the wolves up in Alaska, to introduce them into Yellowstone Park, and to open an office in California that Congress had refused to fund. I'd say stole is the proper word.
All right, fine. Well, I'm not going to argue with it. The question I want to know is, what happened as a result of your expose? Did any of these people go to prison? Did they have to repay the money?
No. By the time I testified before Congress and we had authenticated the theft with the General Accounting Office audit, the wolves had already been released in Yellowstone Park and were outside the park, and they were on their way. And if you know anything about the upper Rockies in the last 10 years, you know that they've pretty well wiped out all the large elk herds. They've wiped out the moose in Yellowstone Park. And they're decreasing elk and moose over larger and larger areas, along with killing dogs, particularly rural dogs. And livestock losses are getting bigger all the time. And there's a lot of threats from that, but Congress couldn't do anything about it because those wolves had already been released and were out into the wild.
But I mean, what about the money? Isn't somebody responsible for stealing the money?
You bet. That's a good question.
And of course, what usually happens is that certainly the Congress does one thing, the bureaucrats do another, and they're never held responsible. In other words, Congress is simply figureheads there, the real powers in the bureaucracy.
That's correct. And what we have here is the state fish and wildlife agencies from whom the money was stolen, who were supposed to use that money for hunters and fishermen, like, I don't know if you hunt or fish, but people like you and I, for boat landings and for more wildlife management areas and for all kinds of wildlife enhancement and fishery enhancement activities. The state fish and game departments never asked for the money to be replaced. Now, you might say...
Hold that thought. Sure. We'll be right back here. And this is Dr. Stan. Jim was simply saying that, of course, the people, the bureaucrats in the Fish and Wildlife Service had stolen the money. It was supposed to be used for hunting purposes and certainly for fishing and to help people. You know, this money was taken from the people who were doing the hunting and fishing. It was to be utilized to facilitate hunting and fishing instead of it was being used actually to trap wolves and take them on into the Yellowstone area. And then, of course, they went out and the wolves, of course, killed most of the elk herds and most of the moose there in Yellowstone, and then killed a lot of the cattle and dogs. And yet, of course, nothing was ever done to the people who stole the money. He testified, brought this out. But nobody would really go after these people who had actually violated the law, because you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, we have our Congress. They're simply figureheads. The real power is in the bureaucracy and the people behind the bureaucracy. Would that be a fair statement, Jim?
Oh, you bet. It's absolutely fair. It's further complicated by the fact that the state fish and wildlife agencies by the mid-90s had become more and more dependent on federal grants that come through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for things such as endangered species and for ecosystem research and native ecosystem restoration and all of these new wave environmental things. And most of the state fish and game people by then were pretty well convinced that hunting and fishing were on their way out. The state fish and wildlife agencies had begun hiring more and more of these protectionist new wave biologists that did not want any timber cutting, any grazing, any hunting. He really didn't even want gun ownership. And they were convinced that their future, the state fish and wildlife agencies knew that their future lied not with hunting and fishing revenue, license revenues, but with grants that would come from the U.S. Congress through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So they didn't want to antagonize these grant givers. They didn't want to antagonize them also because many state fish and game employees looked forward to transferring to the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service if they get the opportunity, because it's a more stable job and usually pays a little better. And then further complicating this with the state fish and wildlife agencies in Congress was the fact that much of the money that was used opened an office in California, so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service could work more closely with environmental and animal rights radical groups. And when Congress didn't fund it, and the Fish and Wildlife Service then stole money and did fund it, the Congress was determined that they were going to shut down that office, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who had recently hired the daughter of Senator Ted Stevens, who just passed away up in Alaska, they hired his daughter. And she had no experience in wildlife or anything. She'd worked in a department store up in Alaska in her whole life. Hired her at the grade that I was retired at after 30-some years and with all the experience I had. And then promoted her to another grade. And when Congress found out about that office and was going to go out there and audit it and shut it down, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service took Ted Stevens' daughter, transferred her out to be the head of that office. And the congressional staff people and a lot of the congressmen were afraid to do anything because they did not want to antagonize Senator Stevens, who was a very powerful U.S. senator. So that just kind of fell by the wayside. So the state fish and wildlife agencies continued a sweetheart relationship with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which to this date is selling out the state residents that they work for in so many states in so many ways. They go to these annual meetings every year with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and a lot of these conservation groups, and they have breakfast together and talk about, you know, helping each other with jobs and grants, and it's all one big happy collective family, if you will. And so the money was never asked to be replaced and was never replaced.
And nobody was ever held responsible for stealing
In fact, the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the time didn't retire. She left when George Bush was elected president, and she spent 3 years working for the Wildlife Federation at a very high salary, and then immediately transferred over to the Defenders of Wildlife, where she holds a top job today. And during her tenure as director, she had appointed the Defenders of Wildlife, for whom she went to work 3 years after she retired, which was the time under lobbying laws that she had to wait. She had appointed them to be the authenticators of wolf damage over livestock that to reimburse people. So they're continually telling ranchers, oh, no, that wasn't wolves, that was probably a mountain lion, that was wild dogs, and, well, there's not enough left here for us to tell, and that's too bad, and get back to us later. And they've minimized the government's position vis-a-vis livestock damage because the Defenders of Wildlife has this key role, kind of like the Nature Conservancy does with land acquisition for the federal government. And she's got a great big job with the same people that she put into that position, which should have never been a non-government position. Nobody's really answerable for their activities, and the statistics that they generate about livestock losses are very, very unreliable statistics.
Well, of course, everybody says what a wonderful Senator Ted Stevens was. Oh, my goodness, he dedicated himself to the country, ladies and gentlemen. He was stealing money from people, you know, all over America to give to people up there in Alaska. He wanted to build the bridge to nowhere. I mean, they were going to spend, you know, $250 million or something like that to put a bridge to a little tiny island with 27 people on it. But he owned a big plot of land there. And there were all sorts of things he did. Nobody wants to speak bad of the dead. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, corruption is the way it works. Now, Cindy, what Jim is describing is Agenda 21. This program of rewilding America, taking half of the land and putting it to wilderness areas, a quarter of the land into transitional areas, and getting people off of their ranches, out of their homes in the wilderness, and forcing everybody into sustainable communities where they can be watched and monitored. And one of the things they're doing is bringing in grizzly bears. One of the things they're doing is bringing in wolves that are destroying the livestock herds and the elk herds and the moose herds. And so tell us about the wolves. Certainly, are the people in those areas where they brought the wolves in happy to see the happy little wolves there, or
no,
are they concerned about them?
They're decimating livestock operations. You know, I could go on for 10 hours on this topic for you, but just very quickly, they kill lots and lots of dogs in Wisconsin, in Montana, down in Arizona. They're big dog killers. Down in Arizona and New Mexico, people are actually building bus stops in cages because the kids are being stalked at bus stops, rural bus stops, for school buses by these wolves. And people have to drive them there and pick them up and drive them home because they're afraid to let the kids walk home with these wolves around. And when you live with wolves like that, do you let the kid go out and go fishing in the afternoon? Even when you send the kid out with the garbage at night, or your mother-in-law is living with you, an elderly woman, and she wants to work in the garden in the afternoon, if you've just had a wolf killing some calves in the neighborhood, everybody is very nervous about it. And if you've had problems with wolves in the area, dogs being killed in that, and you're a retiree living in the rural areas, do you think your grandkids are going to be able to come out and visit you and spend the summer? Or your own kids come out there and spend time when they hear how dangerous it is? No. And livestock operations, just as one example, people say, oh, you know, they only lost these many calves. Well, they're doing a big study right now, and what they're finding is that even the calves that they can substantiate is a small part of the ones that are disappearing and being killed off in the brush and that they can't find at all. And the ones that they do have and then go to sell each year are 100 to 150 pounds lighter than they would have been if the wolves weren't chasing them around out there. And then another thing they're finding out now is they can't use dogs anymore to help round up cattle when they're out in the hills and ravines and that, to bring them back in for the winter, because the cows are so upset about being run by wolves all the time. They see a dog and they charge after the dog and chase it and try to kill it. The dog runs back to where the man is, either sitting on a horse or on an ATV, and tries to hide behind him, and here comes four big steers, you know, with their eyes as big as saucer pans and their tongue out and snot running out of their nose, you know, trying to kill the dog. It's just the costs are enormous. And another thing that was never treated when they brought these wolves in that I think is probably one of the biggest things we've got to be worried about, next to all the people that are going to be killed over time, and I'll talk about that in a minute, is the fact that they carry at least 30 or 35 diseases. They carry them in their gut, they spread tapeworms, they carry anthrax, they get rabies, they get distemper, they get parvo, they carry things like anthrax and mad cow disease, BSE, in their paws. They're just they're big, big spreaders of disease, and they go over large areas. They spend a lot of the year in packs, so like a bat, bats would that they'll sleep together. When one gets the disease, they all get it, and they're spreading those around as they try to kill dogs and go through farmsteads at night. The dogs go out in the morning and smell their poop and where they piddled and lick things that they licked and pick up a lot of the diseases they pick up. And if they come in and they poop in the yard, they're liable to have tapeworm eggs in that poop. Your kid is going to pick it up either out in the yard or in the house in the carpet where you walk in. And none of that was treated when they put the wolves in as far as the potential for what wolves will do. And wolves just killed a school teacher up in Alaska last winter, killed her nater as she was jogging from a small town out to the airport and back on a gravel road. And they just killed a boy up in, he was a college student up in Saskatchewan recently, and he was also dragged off and eaten. And now we're going to have, we've got thousands of these wolves now that the government has introduced and is protecting in the Upper Rockies, Arizona, New Mexico, over in North Carolina and Tennessee, up in the Great Lakes states, and they want to put them in the Grand Canyon, and they want to introduce them up into New England.
And I think you really can't understand what Jim is talking about unless you understand the Program of Sustainable Development, Agenda 21, which is the United Nations agenda for the United States, for the whole world. And it is a program of taking the world back to the way that was before the wicked white man came. And I understand that these people have a different worldview. This is not accidental. These people know exactly what they're doing. They're well-financed. They have powerful forces behind them. And behind that are powerful spiritual forces which would destroy contemporary civilization. And you say, that's crazy talk. Well, you need to study sustainable development. You need to listen to Jim. These things are really going on today. Jim, you'll go right ahead.
Well, I'd just like to back up what you were just saying recently. I agree with it. Not only agree with it 100%, I have seen it in work and activities. The people, when you go to a UN...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Cattlemen and sheep herders are having to go out of business. So when they don't have the elk to eat and they don't have the cattle and the sheep to eat, what do you think that those wolves are going to do? Now, in other countries where they have wolves there, why, certainly they feast on people and they are killing people here. Sydney, what's happening over there in the Russian areas, those areas adjacent to Russia, where they have wolves living in the community? Do they attack the people there?
Oh, you bet they attack. There's a great book that anyone wanting to read about this, read the book Wolves in Russia by Mr. Will Graves. And that book documents 150 years of reports in Russia of woodcutters, of ladies with herding sheep and children, and of terrorized villages in the winter. And to this day, Georgia's just had three or four people killed by wolves, and the people were requesting that the government give them permission to get guns from the police to go after them. That's what it's like still living in those Russian communities. They don't have any guns, but they want to go after them because they're killing them. They've got anthrax outbreaks over there pretty routinely because wolves have gotten into areas that they did anthrax testing, and anthrax is in the soil there, just like we have here in South Dakota and Oregon and a few other places. And they're just a big problem. And there are certain periods, like when there were wars in Russia, the number of wolf kills went way up. Wolf killing humans is what I'm saying. And there's all kinds of accounts of, just like there were in this country in the early years before we got rid of wolves down here in the lower 48, of rabies outbreaks and wolves going on a big tear and killing people and biting people and put them in the hospital and biting domestic livestock and wild livestock or wild game animals that were dying and would get rabies. And they're just an awful animal to have around. And that's why they were purposely and with a forethought gotten rid of in the lower 48 states, because everyone envisioned this, what we now call the lower 48 states of the United States, being what it is, a place to raise cattle, to raise farms and families in rural areas, have a safe and wonderful American country. So we're the envy of the world for, among other things, having this kind of safe communities, and we've just changed that dramatically by allowing the federal government to claim authority that says that these wolves are endangered when there's millions of them throughout the world. When they intermingle with genetically with coyotes and with dingoes and with other wild dogs and jackals around the world, so the fact that you're even talking about a species is really debatable biologically. But now the federal government, by doing this, actually takes over all authority over all wolves from state government. So the state government has to go to the federal government when the government puts wolves there, or they occur in the state, and ask for permission to manage them. And the federal government may or may not say, oh, well, we'll call them threatened for you and that because you've got so many. But these radical groups will go into court, and they'll say, oh, that's not right, then we need more of them, because back under natural circumstances there were 3 zillion of them here in this state, blah, 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 which is all made-up nonsense. But they go into court, and kind of like this recent thing you guys had out there in California, with a judge saying it didn't matter what people wanted, they get the federal government's judges and the federal government agency, the Fish and Wildlife Service, to say, oh, well, we'll have to call them endangered. Or if you've only been managing them for a year or two under our authority, we'd like to make some changes in it. So the states really are nothing but subcontractors. They're really Charlie McCarthy's, they used to say when I was a kid. They're Charlie McCarthy sock puppets for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who is in turn a sock puppet for the Humane Society of the United States, Greenpeace, the Wilderness Society, the Animal Welfare Institute, and all of these radical groups with these radical agendas.
And
then you've got the politicians in there trying to get votes in all of this.
And I think people have to understand that they really want to destroy our society. It is an organized effort. I mean, recently, a little different subject, why they passed legislation in California where every chicken has to be allowed to get out and roam around a garden for a few minutes every day. Have you ever tried to catch a chicken and put him back in the coop? Why, after all, what about those poor little chickens? So basically, they're going to close down the chicken industry here in California, and then we're going to refuse to buy eggs from any other state, where they will not give those chickens the ability to get out and stretch their legs every day and run around. It is totally impossible to round up the chickens after you've done that. But you see, what they really want to do is destroy our society. They want to cut down, destroy the cattle herds and the sheep herds and drive the ranchers off the land. This is a agenda to destroy America as we know it. Understand, this is not accidental. It's intentional. Well, Jim, certainly go right ahead, because I think it's so vitally important. The average individual has no idea what these programs are, that this is well-financed. I mean, here in California, it's destroyed the agriculture in the Central Valley of California by cutting the water off to the farmers, because we have to protect a 3-inch spelt, and certainly and destroying the elk and moose herds. Aren't these people concerned about the elk and the moose? Don't they have as much a right to live as the wolves? Or are they really intent upon disrupting the very structure of our society?
Well, I think you're 100% right. The truth is that they care not one whit for the elk or the deer. They simply care about gaining control of American citizens, the way they live, where they live, how much they make, the kind of vehicles they drive, and the whole nine yards. And the guns, the Second Amendment thing, these people in Washington that I was working with off and on, these radical lobbyist groups, the anti-gun people were in there with the animal rights people, and they were all in there with the wilderness people, and the whole nine yards, it's all one big, people don't understand that. And it's hard to talk about this without sounding like, oh, you're just a black helicopter person, you know. Conspiracy. I hear that word all the time. Oh, you just think there's conspiracy. Well, the truth is that these people have all been working together for the last 30 years. They started getting these laws passed, all of them, from the Wilderness Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and changing the agencies dramatically, which didn't take a whole lot, but began then, in the late 60s and early 70s. That's when there was just a rash of these things being passed that gave the federal government authority over all sea otters, authority over all manatees, each of which, for instance, spend most of their time in state waters, along with the whales and the seals, and we were told that the baby seals would now be protected and this and that. Now we've got seals decimating the salmon as they try to go up our streams in the Pacific, where we're saying, oh, there's not enough salmon up here, we need to take down the dams, but we won't touch the seals and sea lions at the mouth of the river that are just decimating the salmon that try to get back up there. And then we turn around and we
hold
say,
that
well,
thought. Hold that thought, Jim. We'll be right back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. Jim is simply pointing out that these people are there to disrupt our society. The environmentalists, what they really want to do is undermine the fabric of our society, but they're not going to come out and talk about that. They're going to talk about they're concerned about the little fishies and the fact that there are less salmon, and, oh, we've got to tear the dams down, so that the salmon will be able to swim happily up the stream so that we can have more salmon. But they don't mention that they've outlawed doing anything about the seals and the sea lions, and they're all down there at the mouth of the river just waiting for those salmon, and they're just decimating them before they come up because we've interfered with the normal balance of nature. And certainly we've got more seals and more sea lions now than ever before, and they are just really enjoying all those nice salmon that were providing for them, and then we wonder why there are less salmon. But once we have all these new laws that to protect everyone, you protect one group and you destroy another. You protect the wolves, you destroy the elk, you destroy the moose, and then you destroy the cattle, and then pretty soon you have to start, hey, well, they have to eat something. What's wrong with an occasional person? After all, don't the wolves have to live and eat like everything else? Jim, before we go on, I want you to get out your website, tell people how they can get your information, because I know you feel very deeply about this, I can tell, and of course I feel deeply about it too, and I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to have you on. But how can people get more information on this subject?
Well, Doctor, all I can suggest is if they write me directly at my email address of jimbeers7@comcast.net. That's jimbeers7@comcast.net. I've had a website and several blog sites just shut down on me. The people that are angered by what I talk about and what I have to say about it have been very effective in that. And now I write, and I send out the things that I write to probably close to 1,000 people now. And they spread it to other people, and it pops up in magazines and in newsletters and news reports in a lot of rural newspapers, and I'm glad to do that. And I go out and give talks a lot. I've been in Montana and Idaho and Oregon and the state of Washington a lot recently, and I'm going back out there again here in another month. But I do the best I can. I try to get explanations out there, and a lot of things that I write pop up the next day in Europe and Australia and other places. I get emails from people in Finland and Asia about these topics. So all I can say is that I try to do my best. I'm retired now, and I was told to go home for 10 months and was then later given a big cash settlement. They had threatened to take away my pension, take away my health coverage, and all kinds of things. They had called the police when they sent me these threatening letters from the Fish and Wildlife Service and said that they were going to fire me and that I may be dangerous. And had I blundered into the Fish and Wildlife Service offices that day, there's no telling what would have happened because I had several gun permits at the time, and they had told the police that I might be dangerous. So you're really playing with fire with these people. So I write as much as I can, and I go and try to help people day in and day out with specific problems that they've got. And I talk a lot about, I know a lot about the law. I know a lot about bureaucracy and about the way Washington works. And I know quite a bit about biology. So a lot of these topics, from land closures to the animal treatment, animal rights legislation, and things like this wolf business right now and the Endangered Species Act, are things that my perspective is just one of many, but it's one that seems to help a lot of people. And I try very hard to be as helpful to rural Americans and animal owners and animal users as I can.
Well, they've destroyed the lumbering industry here in California and much of the Northwest. They know exactly what they're doing. Certainly closing down mining all across this country. Oh, in the name. And then they're closing down oil drilling, and certainly they're doing everything they can to destroy farming and ranching. Ladies and gentlemen, these people know what they're doing. They're actually destroying agriculture here in California, in the Central Valley of California. But it is all part of a plan. People find it so difficult to believe that anything could be this diabolical, but it's really very well financed. These people are totally dedicated, and of course they will not allow any opposition. And believe me, you're not going to read this in your regular newspapers or hear this discussed on television. Because they, people who control the mass media, interlock with this whole movement. It's called Sustainable Development Agenda 21. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for Jim. Certainly one of the most knowledgeable people on this subject we've run into, and I'm just so pleased we have an opportunity to have him here on our program. Now, certainly, as you talk about the danger of rabies, I mean, I would think that this would be something everybody would be concerned about.
Oh,
and
then,
of course, the wolves can give it to the dogs, and the family dog. Of course, most of the dogs now have been immunized against it, but certainly you would not want a reservoir, bring a reservoir of tapeworm and of rabies into your community, and yet that's exactly what they're doing. And what did you say? These wolves carry 30 or 40 different diseases that we've now brought into our United States?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. The fact that this has not been discussed with the introduction of these wolves, and it's just criminal. The people that brought these wolves in without talking about this stuff and describing the danger of these wolves taking tapeworms even into the cities, the suburbs. When you think about all of our running tracks, you don't see wolves going to Moscow or St. Petersburg. They hang around the edges, but they don't go in there. For one thing, they'd be killed by the police right away. But they don't have these walking paths and all this natural vegetation around them that we have. They're just inviting paths for those wolves to come in at night and explore around, look for things to eat, and go up and snarl at a dog in a kennel or just pick up mouth things and leave saliva on them that the dogs pick up in the morning. And then here in this country, unlike Europe and unlike Asia and Russia and India, dogs are always kept outside. Here we bring them in the house after they get exposed to all of these things. We bring them in the house, and they can pass tapeworms around on the carpet mat. But we let our children sleep with them. We let the kids get kissed by the dog and get licked in the face by the dogs, or we've got a cut on our hand, and the dog's allowed to lick it. We've got a situation here in this country with our cultural interface with dogs and our habits as a result of living in a wolf-free environment for over 100 years, okay? We've just developed a whole different philosophy and activity and behavior with our dogs, and that is going to be a very, very dangerous thing as these wolves get more and more numerous and go closer and closer and into larger and larger communities as their range expands all over, and they'll live anywhere. They're just like a wild dog. The same people that would go nuts looking out the window and seeing two pit bulls and a Doberman running loose in the neighborhood and call the police, get the kids inside, and that, the same people in the city will sit and say, oh, here, I'm going to send some money to Greenpeace and the Defenders of Wildlife because they're helping the wolves, and I think, oh, it'd be wonderful to have wolves out there in case I go on a vacation and my kids and I can hear one howl or we'll see one from the car as we drive down the road. The same people that are scared to death of these, and we're talking here about wild dogs that are generations wild, okay, that go from 100 pounds up to 150 to even to 200 pounds. But even the small ones are extremely dangerous. They move in groups. I mean, the idea that the government would think that it has the authority to do this is just outrageous.
But it isn't the government, Jim. It is this small little group of very wicked people who have a different agenda, who really want to destroy our nation as it exists. They really want to rewild this country.
Well, it's true, but they're using this federal government authority and these federal laws to go into lawsuits before judges and to get their kind of thinkers. They just put one in the Fish and Wildlife Service at a top job from the Center for Biological Diversity, I mean an extreme environmental radical group. They're stuffing these federal agencies with these people, and they're passing more and more laws and using more and more precedents from lawsuits where they go in before a favorable judge who says, sure, those wolves are still endangered. Nobody should ever kill one, and if you kill one, you can't shoot them, you can't trap them, and of course you can't poison them, and just if do what you can, so, which means you can't do anything.
And okay, we have the same thing with mountain lions around here.
Exactly.
Mountain lions are picking people off, and but they're endangered. You can't harm those poor little mountain lions.
Well, California passed that law in the 70s.
I know.
You guys did that to yourselves. Let me tell you, I got a quick story. But when you did that, it was back in the 80s, they noticed that your bighorn sheep, which was a big economic resource for the state, because guys pay a lot of money to go shoot a bighorn sheep. You were selling a lot of licenses. The bighorn sheep in the Sierras were disappearing. And they found out that because there were so many mountain lions in California, they were going up into the mountains earlier in the year looking for things to eat, and they discovered these big high meadows in the late winter where those bighorn sheep were having their young. And it was open, and that the cats started figuring out how to feed the one that was laying down on her side about to give birth. Whap, right down there, they kill a female and they kill the young, the same thing they did with the elk, and pretty soon you don't have any bighorn sheep left. Now, that's bad enough, but the fact is that they were Fish and Wildlife Service in the 90s was spending $700,000 to $800,000 a year to send federal trappers in there to trap those mountain lions that you guys wouldn't do anything about and kill them, because they were killing, and they were the limiting factor on those bighorn sheep that the Fish and Wildlife Service said just in the Sierra Mountains the bighorn sheep were endangered. So because it's a state problem that you guys brought on yourselves, the rest of us in the country had to, this is going on all over the country, not just California, but all of us had to pick up the control of those mountain lions up there to try and protect the bighorn sheep. It's just, the whole business is just stinks to high heaven.
Well, I don't envy you having to work in this system. I mean, I get angry enough just sitting here behind a microphone and considering the insanity that's going on, ladies and gentlemen, but it's not really insanity. These people know exactly what they're doing. There is a program at the Rewilding of America, financed by some of the wealthiest people who hate America. Well, let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Barbara. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. I know. It's a very fascinating program. But I was hearing that years ago, the state, not years ago, but not too long ago, they were actually introducing wolves into areas where they had never been before.
Well, I would say to you honestly, based on everything I know, there is no such place in North America. Wolves have been everywhere at one time or another. And when we first settled this country, there were places where there were just a few wolves or no wolves for a long time. I mean, walking, like Lewis and Clark went through some areas where they didn't see any wolves for an extended period. And that is merely a result of fires going through the area, or they killed off most of the big game, and so they were off in other areas for a few years and then came back. So their numbers go up and down. They affect other animals dramatically. So I don't think there's any place in North America that you could say, oh, there were never wolves there. I think even you go down to the bottom of Florida, certainly as you go north, there are more and more wolves, and they got bigger and bigger. But they were all over the West, and they were always a constant source of problem. Indians felt, and the early settlers felt, that wolves were responsible for the smallpox being spread like wildfire through the Upper Plains Indians back in the early 1800s. They think that it was wolves eating the carcasses and then going to other villages right away once they decided that a village full of sick people and dead people that couldn't be buried was a source of food, and they just spread the smallpox all over the place. Early settlers and early soldiers had account after account of terrible interfaces with wolves where the wolves were attacking them. Rabid wolves trying to get into forts and scratching at the doors and howling and getting shot from the up above the fort. And soldiers and the early settlers and cowboys, and they were scared to death of wolves, not just because they were so vicious, but because they knew they carried a lot of diseases, and if they had rabies, then they really had a problem, because if they didn't kill them outright, the darn thing would be on you in a heartbeat, and once they bite you, you got what they used to call hydrophobia, or rabies, and you were a sure thing to get to die from that.
But, of course, now we can't shoot them because they're endangered. Barbara, anything else you wanted to say?
It was just very interesting because I grew up in an area where we had wolves, and we actually really didn't have any problem with them, but they also had natural food to eat, too. And it was a very rural area. And
yeah, that kind of, just even when the Indians were here before Columbus and everything else, that's something that varies over time. There might be a long period when you didn't have them around. There might be a period when you had them around, they had plenty to eat, and they didn't come near the villages or your farm or something. And then there are other times, as wolves in Russia will tell you, when there's just a rash of outbreak of attacks and for food purposes and because of disease. And where they do occur routinely, you have a much higher incidence of many of these very deadly diseases.
Okay, anything else, Barbara?
Just one other question. Now, where are they raising these wolves? Are they actually, do they have an area where they're, you know...
Some of them have been raised. The red wolves, as they call them, which are nothing but coyote and dog genes, to be honest with you, that they've been dumping there in North Carolina, now Tennessee, they've been raising those in some pens the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has, as well as the original ones that they put, they called Mexican wolves. It's a smaller wolf, small being 80 to 120 pounds. That they've dumped into Arizona, New Mexico, along the border of those two states. And the ones that they put in the upper Rockies, they went up to Canada somewhere. Well, no, but they won't tell anybody where, but I think they went way up near the Northwest Territories and northern Alberta and live-trapped a bunch of wolves up there and just brought them down into Yellowstone and kicked them loose.
Okay, anything else, Barbara?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Henry calling from Connecticut. Hi, Henry. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, this may sound like a stupid question, but it's kind of a serious question. What do you think about some people keep wolves as pets?
Oh, what do I think personally? I mean,
I think you've got the same problem. What do they like as pets?
Well, you got the same problem. In a way, it's the people that have got those dogs that are wolves, or they claim are half wolf and all this other stuff. We see it a lot here in Minnesota, where I'm from now. Not a lot, but fairly often. They're almost, I think of them as a rural version of a lot of urban crack dealers who have pit bulls and Dobermans and German Shepherds that they want to convince other people are pretty tough, person to person is, because they own these things, or they want to make sure that nobody will break into their place when they're not there and this, that, and the other thing. A lot of rural people that have these animals are sort of living out that kind of a fantasy with them. Whether or not they should have them or not, I think, is a state concern. That should be a state law, whether they permit them or do not.
Right. But I also heard that compared to a dog or a German Shepherd, that because it's alpha male and alpha female status, and they look at the owner as the alpha male or alpha female, they wait for them to attack the burglar, meaning the human, and then they follow through. Is that true? Unless you
can
attack the wolves that don't
travel. If they've got wolf blood in them, they're a wild animal mostly, and that therefore they're very unpredictable, and they're capable of almost anything. They're not to be trusted at all.
Is it now nothing? When I go
hold that thought, Henry. Right. We'll be back in a moment. Henry, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to hang up after you answer this question, unless you can't hear it on the shortwave, because I'm listening to the shortwave. Is there bite, a wolf bite?
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
Development, and we take you there into the whole incredible plan. It's laid out in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Program that came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992. Published by Cambridge University Press in 1994, it lays out the plan that we're talking about tonight. And, of course, the rewolving and the re-grizzly bearing of civilized areas is simply part and parcel of that plan. Stopping mining, stopping lumbering, getting people out of their cars, getting them either onto bicycles or into mass transportation, taking them out of their homes and putting them into sustainable communities. There is a master plan. The average individual really wants to just live their life. Unfortunately, the people on the other side have an agenda, and they intend to destroy civilization, modern civilization as we know it. And people say, that is crazy talk. Nobody would want to do that. Well, we're not dealing with people who look at the world through the same eyes that you and I do. Certainly, we have my talk on sustainable development, the road to world government. We have a four-tape set on sustainable development. You'll certainly want to get our syllabus there. Of course, you'll see excerpts from an interview that Marie Strong, who's one of the leaders of this whole movement, had with a reporter from West Magazine, where he tells us, Marie Strong tells the reporter that he has this recurrent dream that since mankind is destroying civilization, he and a group of other wealthy men one day actually just close down the stock market and bring the whole financial structure of the Western world to destruction. And you say, well, who in the right mind would do that? Well, Marie Strong gave this story, and we reproduce it here. And until you understand there really are people who have a different worldview, none of this makes sense. You need to get my syllabus on sustainable development, or you need to get the Earth Charter, and you can get it on the internet, or you can get it from Radio Liberty if you get something, or it's included in our sustainable development syllabus with many other documents that you need to read to understand what we are up against. And then, of course, we do actually have copies of Agenda 21 put out by the United Nations. You can get the Santa Cruz edition. Santa Cruz was a trial area for this, and the first Agenda 21 report came out of Santa Cruz. It was modified for the United Nations. Both, either one or the other, or both of them are available from Radio Liberty. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We suggest you call 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to learn more about the things we're talking about. our number 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Let me suggest that certainly Michael Shaw's website goes into this in great detail, what best source of information on this subject you'll find anywhere in the country, and that would be at freedomadvocates.org. Freedomadvocates.org. We recommend this to you. Understand that they're not worried about the animals. They're worried about it's all about control. It's about driving people off of their land and, of course, destroying the infrastructure of our society. When you understand that, you understand why they're not enforcing the immigration laws, why they're encouraging the destruction of our farming and of our ranching and of our lumber industry and of our mining industry and of our oil industry and of our housing industry and of our businesses. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. I suggest you go to my website, pull down my newsletters, read them at radioliberty.com. We hope you'll get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which explains the spiritual component of everything going on today. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll want to get the three DVDs on The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. Three very professionally done DVDs. We recommend them to you. And then, of course, the DVD on They Sold Their Soul to Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Soul to Rock and Roll. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from our hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. So the last hour, we talked about the environmental movement, the rewilding of America, the bringing of grizzly bears and wolves and certainly other wild animals, mountain lions, into civilized areas to plague the people. And a lot of this doesn't make sense unless you understand that there is another agenda. I have been studying what's going on in America for probably over 20 years. And I always knew I was missing something. I mean, some people said all the problems that we had in our society were related to the communists. And then some people said, no, it was the people of great wealth who put up the great foundations. And then some people said it was certainly the Catholic Church, or that it was the Jewish people, or it was the Jesuits, or it was the Masons, or there was always an explanation for what was going on, but there were so many conflicting stories. I knew I was missing something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. It's like putting your finger onto a little blob of mercury, and it simply moves away, and you can't ever pin it down. And then it was in the early 1980s when I read a book by my good friend Constance Cumby. She's come to be a good friend through the years, and we've come to understand that there is another dimension there. There really are other spiritual forces in the world which most people are totally unaware of. Well, with us this evening is a woman, a Marine. I'm not going to use her full name, but a Marine.
I leave you at liberty if you desire to, Dr. Stan, whatever you wish.
Well, we'll just call her Marine, and Marine basically comes from a family that was deeply involved in the occult. Now, most people don't even understand what the occult is. I mean, certainly we see these programs about, you know, the friendly witch or the medium touching on the supernatural, but we really don't understand that we live in a material society, but there's a mystical society there. We live in a subjective society, a tangible society, but there's an intangible society. There is a spiritual force out there. We live in a visible world, but there's an invisible world. And so, Marine, why don't you tell our listeners about your experience growing up in a family that was deeply involved in the occult?
Yes, I'll be glad to do that, and thank you for inviting me, Dr. Stan. It's an honor. The period of time of which I will be speaking is approximately 16 years, minus 2 years, when I lived two different times with my grandparents in Hawaii, and incidentally was a student at Punahou School, where Barack Obama attended years later. I'm able to be specific about my age at which things occurred, by which house we were living in at the time, and whether my siblings had yet been born, and whether I had begun school or what grade I was in. The memories of those years are burned indelibly into my mind. I would like the listener to know that I take no pleasure in speaking of these things or of my parents as they were, and am mindful of the Lord's will that we honor our parents, and I'd like to say that I took really good, respectful, and sacrificial care of them to the end of their lives. Except for a brief mention of this on your program some time ago, Dr. Stan, I have not spoken of my parents' occult activities, and if you had not been speaking of the terrible destructive effect of the occult in America, I would not be speaking of it now. It is a very painful subject. I was the eldest of three children and was the main focus of my father's cruelty and the subject of his paranormal and occultic experiments. Trembling in fear from the age of three became as natural as breathing. At that time, my father was dragging me out of bed in the middle of the night and beating me brutally, not occasionally, but night after night. Of course, I cried, and I began and begged him to tell me what I had done wrong, and he said I had done nothing wrong, but that I was attracting that kind of treatment to myself. That was a part of the philosophy at that time of certain belief systems.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Marine, you were telling how your father would just drag you out of bed every night and beat you for no reason at all, but go ahead.
That's right. And I asked him what I'd done wrong, and he said nothing, but I was attracting that kind of treatment to myself. He was actually a master of shifting responsibility from himself. I thought a lot about that as best I could at that age, but could not figure out how to avoid it. He also said that if I went on crying, he would beat me harder, and he did, sometimes with his leather razor strop. The Lord was showing me himself from the very beginning, however, and I saw his work in sunsets, stars, flowers, and the sparkles in the snow. I knew he had to be a good and loving God in order to create such beauty. I was not yet aware of my parents' involvement in the occult, but the effects of it were certainly being felt by us, the children. By the time I was five, my father was dragging me out of bed and making me stand up in front of him and literally debate philosophy, religion, and politics, which, of course, I knew nothing about. I was 5 years old, as I've said. However, in order to avoid a beating, I had to win the debate. The only way I could do that was to learn to think logically with whatever facts were supplied to me. My father threw in a lot of Plato and other philosophers to support his position. When that debate was over at around midnight, I was not allowed to return to bed, but it was required to continue standing before him and take the opposite political or religious position and argue all of that all over again until dawn. Again, this was night after night, night after night. Years later, he told me that he needed to debate things with a mind that was equal to his and that he had been honing his mind against mine. Well, that's hardly a job for a five-year-old daughter. When I was six, I became aware of my parents' involvement in the ritualistic occult. We had moved to a larger home, and my parents began holding secret meetings on Friday evenings. My mother made heavy, unleavened whole wheat muffins for dinner only on Friday nights. She pressed a cross on the tops of the buns with the back of a knife before baking them. I have wondered since if that were some sort of a satanic counterfeit Passover or communion bread. I really don't know. Maybe you know, Dr. Stan. We children were not allowed to have any friends over to play on Friday afternoons nor go anywhere else on Fridays to play. It was hard after we were in school all week to be confined to the house on Friday nights. At dusk, the draperies were drawn.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Maureen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Maureen is simply telling us about her family, which was deeply involved in the occult. Now, when she was five, she was required to stand in front of her father and debate various philosophical ideas from the Bible and from Plato. She didn't know anything about Plato. She didn't know anything about the Bible, but her father was trying to stimulate her mind and challenge himself, and then after she had debated one position, he'd ask her to debate the other position. By the time she was six, they'd moved into a larger home, and every Friday evening they would have secret occult meetings in their home. What people don't understand is that these secret organizations exist all across America, and you're not hearing about them. They don't want you to understand them. Many times they're involved in all sorts of violent activities and mass murders. Certainly the Son of Sam killer, David Berkowitz, was part of a satanic cult, totally controlled and covered up by the media. Eventually, he did come forward. He's converted, became a Christian. He's still in prison. He named all of the other people who were involved in the cult, who carried out many of the murders. He carried out some of them. They carried out other murders. They were associated with an organization known as the Process Church of the Latter-day Judgment, the same organization that Manson, of Sharon Tate fame, was involved with, totally covered up by the control of the media here. But you go ahead with the story.
All right. At dusk on Friday evenings, the draperies were drawn, and really, truly, an ominous silence settled over the house. We children were sent upstairs right after dinner. We were always told never to speak to the neighbors, our friends, the school, and as I gathered, our grandparents either, about the meetings. I felt a certain guilt set in because I hated the secrecy, but I obeyed. After dark, people in the group arrived, probably 10 or 12 in all. The members of the group chose secret names that they used among themselves and at the meetings. One woman called herself Kuan Yin, which I've been told is the Chinese goddess of happiness. I don't know about that for sure. The ritual centered around a square of canvas on the floor. It was about 8 feet by 8 feet square and marked off in 12-inch squares. There were symbols inscribed in the squares. The people walked slowly around and around the canvas, chanting in syllables that I had never heard and could not recognize. They were wearing long robes, each one different, soft-soled gray suede slippers, and carried electric candles, and incense was burned in brass pots. My brother and I watched these meetings from the staircase. Each member also carried, and this was inexplicable to me, a doll. These were not occultic-looking dolls, just regular toy store dolls, and I remember a yellow and green-dressed harlequin doll, among others. I have wondered since then if the reason we children were not subjected to ritual abuse, although we were subjected to a lot of other abuse, just because of those dolls. I'd have been really happy if those dolls had been given into my loving care. The name of the group was The Order. It seemed to be a part of a network of such groups around the country. A man named Mr. Russell came from St. Louis from time to time to stay at our house for several weeks at a time. He was the leader of the order over a large area, probably several states. His name in the order was Ganesti. There were long, serious after-dinner discussions on philosophical and occultic topics. During those years, my little sister was really afraid of the dark, and so was I. My father shut her up at about the age of three in a totally dark, empty cement room in the basement. There was no place to sit, no light, no comfort of any kind. Her little three-year-old voice still rings in my ears, "No, Daddy, no, Daddy." Then he called through the heating ducts in a deep, ghostly voice, but still recognizable as our father. He intoned, "Susie, Susie, do not be afraid. I am your savior. I am your savior." My heart just ached for her, and she just kept crying out, "No, Daddy." I was standing just outside the door longing to let her out, and I could not. This family was struggling financially, and every bit spent on the order was literally taking food off the table, and we children often went hungry and experienced other kinds of deprivation. A man named John Barnes spent many hours at our house using colored pencils to inscribe strange symbols on 2x2 blocks of maple wood. The symbols put on the blocks look like the closest I can come to it to describe it is something like Sanskrit. There were a lot of scrolls and squiggles. I never did know what they were used for or their significance. The members of the orders wore sterling silver rings that had Chinese characters across the top and were engraved inside with Aum Ha. That is spelled A-U-M. I don't know if there was a hyphen in there or just a space. A-U-M-H-A. They ended their chants with Aum Ha, much as Christians do with Amen at the end of prayers. By the time I was six, I was longing to attend church. God was not at home, that's for sure, and I hoped to be close to Him at church. My father scoffed at the idea and at me for wanting to go, but did not forbid it, so I was up early on Sundays and walked by myself the half mile to the neighborhood church. Over the years, I sang in the choirs and hoped I was meeting God. I thoroughly enjoyed the hours spent there. School and church were a refuge and an oasis. When I was six, my father began using me in his ESP experiments. He had become fascinated with the experiments in extrasensory perception being conducted at Duke University by Dr. Rhine. He sat me down in the dining room by the hour to do what he called turning cards or calling cards. He would select a card from an ordinary deck, and without showing it to me, he said he was concentrating on it, that it was in his head, and would appear to me on his forehead, and that I should tell him which card I saw there. At first, I didn't see anything on his forehead and was not doing well at this at all. He acted really impatient and patronizing, as if I were an adult or an unworthy person. However, as time went on, I got better and better, I'm sorry to say. No matter how well I did, he never ever, and unto the end of his days, ever expressed any approval of me. As I began to do very well with the cards, reaching a level of 22 out of 25 cards, I have to ask, and I've asked statisticians, what would be the possibility of reaching 22 out of 25 cards guessing, and they've said it's very unlikely. But I called 22 out of 25 cards correctly and consistently. But of course, it was not I. We know that it was Satan who was bringing such results. My father was absolutely elated at what he believed to be his success, and I was a mere lab rat to him. He was also trying to duplicate the Duke University experiments in mental telepathy and clairvoyance. During that time, he tried to hypnotize me several times, but it was not successful. I can remember his intent and penetrating look and the deep tone of his voice, but it simply didn't work. Something inside of me sensed and told me that there was something wrong with that sort of thing. He was furious, and he told my mother that my will was unbreakable, and even worse, it was unbendable. During that same time, he showed me how he could bend a spoon handle. I remember you're asking me that on a previous program of yours, Dr. Stan. He told me to try it, and I couldn't do it. I could do nothing.
And for our listeners out Up there, basically, there was a major general who was actually involved with the Special Forces Unit, and I was trying to contact the other dimension. And when I was back visiting Joyce Riley, she showed me the spoon that he had taken and bent. But this is a mind trick. In other words, you tap into this other dimension, and you can actually bend the handle of that spoon into a complete circle. You do not do that. You are tapping into this supernatural power that is there. And certainly this unit that Major General was involved with was had actually recruited Yuri Jenner, I think was his name, something of the sort. Anyway, he was, of course, on the lecture circuit and certainly did this sort of thing for a showpiece. But there are people, of course, who tap into the other dimension and you see these things happening and you say this could not happen logically, and they're right. It could not happen logically. You can't levitate, utilizing the material world we live in. But if you tap into the mystical world, these things are possible. Go right ahead, Maria.
That's right, and I can hardly take it in right now. I know that spoon. It had a very heavy, thick handle, and it could not have been done normally. It just could not have been. And years later, I came to realize how cowardly my brother's behavior was toward me to use a vulnerable child, his own child, who had an innate knowledge that it's God's will to obey her father, and to take it in the direction that he did. It makes me very angry. He, of course, should have found a willing adult to participate in his experiments, but actually he should not even have been involved in that kind of experiments at all. When I was 4, 5, and 6, he frequently sent me to bed without supper at 3 or 4 in the afternoon without a reason. The reason he gave was, because I can. It was many years later before I began to understand the distinction between power and authority, and it's a very important difference that we all should learn. On those afternoons that I was lying there in bed, I could hear other children playing outside and longed to be out there with them. I just hugged my teddy bear and thanked God for my clean white bed. I amused myself by watching the shadows of the leaves on the wall. We children were frequently burned with cigarettes, and my father laughed as if it were great entertainment, and he seemed to expect us to think it was too. At this point, the listener may be questioning my father's sanity. I assure you that he was entirely sane and extremely intelligent and very wicked, and I have to think that Satan must have had a very strong hold on him. During those years, he often spoke of the Brotherhood of the Great White Temple, but I don't know if he had any contact with it. He also spoke frequently of his being an initiate, and he seemed to think that he was well on his way to being what he called an adept.
An adept, A-D-E-P-T, and that's a common phrase used within masonry. We'll be right back.
Yeah, having special knowledge and powers.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
I asked her to come on, and she's telling you the story of her upbringing in an occult family. And certainly her father had tapped into the supernatural power, was able to take a spoon and bend the handle around, and certainly had he was into all sorts of philosophy and Plato and all of this sort of thing. Oh, they began molesting her when she was about 9 years of age, went on for a couple of years. Her mother was a devotee of Rudolf Steiner. Now, those of you who don't know who Rudolf Steiner was, he started out as a disciple of Madame Blavatsky and her Luciferian teachings. He eventually went off on his own and formed his own organization, and Steiner certainly is to this day known as one of the leaders of the world occult movement. He's long since dead, but certainly his influence is still here. You go right ahead, Maureen.
Yes, I was just saying that my life has taken some amazing turns. I spoke earlier of a Mr. Russell who was the regional director of the order. At one of his visits to our home, he gave me a Bible. And this is so hard to believe. He gave me a Bible, King James Version, leather-bound, and with my name embossed in gold on the cover. I don't know what to make of that. Can you explain that to me, Dr. Stan?
I really can't. I don't know why. You just go ahead and tell the story, and maybe we'll figure it out later on.
Okay, I was about 7, and I began reading it immediately. And at last, I knew I had read the truth. I had the truth in my hands. What a joyful time that was. But these matters in my family began generations before my parents. My grandfather often spoke of his female forebears who engaged in automatic riding and saw spirit beings around the rockers of their chairs and tried to avoid crushing them. My grandfather was a 33-degree Mason and often spoke of his attendance at the Scottish Rite Temple. And the inconsistencies in all of this just really puzzles me, to say the least. He and my grandmother also attended services 3 times a week at a large mainline denominational church, and I attended with them many times. That denomination became apostate decades ago. I am so thankful to the Lord for keeping me out of the beliefs of my ancestors and translating me into his kingdom. I've been able to forgive my parents, and as your guest Eva said, That's really key. It's really important to forgive. I have been able to forgive them for everything. It was very wicked for them to try to lead me into the occult and to inflict the family with disaster for generations to come. However, Jesus Christ died for their sins, and he forgave them, and so I have forgiven them as well. And that's about where it ends.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we do know that the occult gifts are passed down from generation to generation. Our friend Joanna Michelson, certainly her parents weren't into the occult, but she had an aunt who was into the occult, and this gift had been passed down to her, and she was a medium, and actually she had the supernatural power. You see this program on television, it's called The Medium, where this very attractive woman, has a supernatural power. Her name is Alison DuBois. She helps the district attorney in Phoenix get the bad guys. The story is based upon the story of Alison DuBois, who is a very real person who actually worked with the district attorney, helped the police catch the bad guys. She had a supernatural power. And that power can be used for all sorts of things. The difficulty is some people have it, but you do not want to use this. We're told in the Holy Scriptures to avoid astrology and fortune tellers and mediums and diviners and people who are into these alternative spirituality. It is not that this doesn't work. The thing is, it does work, but you don't want to have anything to do with it because it will lead you astray and eventually, of course, can very well lead you to hell. And the problem is that there's so many organizations that are into this alternative spirituality. Most Masons have no idea what Masonry is about, but it is really a Gnostic religion. And once you understand that, you can understand the writings of Albert Pike and Manly P. Hall and Mackey and all the other Masonic philosophers and writers. And when you read the things that they're writing, it doesn't make any sense unless you understand that there are two gods, and they are disciples of the other god. Go right ahead, Maureen. Did you have a comment?
I was just going to say that as my various relatives died, their papers and books were passed into my hands, and I read all the Masonic books, and I was just shocked at what they swear oaths to do.
Amen. Hold that thought for just a minute. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to have a question or comment, why, would love to hear from you. I'm sure Maureen would do her best to answer you, but this is not imaginary. This is the common denominator behind the whole move towards the New World Order. Well, Maureen, Sydney, go on with your story, and I realize this must be very painful in many ways for you to talk about this sort of thing, but it is I think it's vitally important that people understand this is not imaginary. It is really very real, isn't it?
It is very real, and I lived it, so I know it's real.
Now, you commented that you had the opportunity of reading some of the Masonic materials after these things were passed on to you. Go ahead.
I read the Masonic books, and I was absolutely shocked at the oaths that the Masons are required to take to kill if a brother has been, what is it, offended or something has been done to a Masonic brother, then you kill somebody over that. It's been years, and I don't remember what all it was, but it was very bloody. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that specific thing, but I know that they, certainly in the first degree, while they give the permission to have their throat cut in there, and their tongue torn out, and then to be buried in the sands of the sea up to the level of their neck. And the second level, I think they cut out their entrails, and the third one, they cut out their heart. If they were ever to violate the oaths of Masonry, why would grown men take such terrible oaths when they are actually pledging their life to the light? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, as a Marine, and we're simply talking about her life and the occult. And if you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The average individual has very little realization of how much of this occult there actually is in our society. There are all sorts of satanic covens. There are all sorts of satanic ritual abuse. There's all sorts of satanic murders which are consistently covered up by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We actually have a book, Diary of a Devil Hunter, written by a man who spent many years going around to police forces explaining to them about satanic ritual murders, which there are many of them, actually. And then, of course, the people from the FBI would come out to tell the police that there was absolutely nothing to this. Why would they do that? Well, because, of course, if J. Edgar Hoover was deeply involved with homosexuality, and I feel that he was probably also involved in the occult. But, of course, the American people don't know that. He's a hero. He's a great anti-communist. Ladies and gentlemen, he covered for the mob for many years. And why did he refuse to prosecute the mob and the Cosa Nostra prior to the Kennedy administration? Very simply, they had information about his sexual aberrations.
And he was being sort of blackmailed.
He was being blackmailed by the mob, and it wasn't until the Kennedys came in and exposed the Cosa Nostra why, of course, that he was forced to go after them. And that, of course, probably is one reason why Bobby Kennedy was killed in punishment for daring to come out to Sydney and force the FBI to do what was right. Unfortunately, many times we find that much of what we believe just is not true. But go ahead, Maureen.
Well, I was just going to say, it's frightening to think that our police departments are using people in the occult to solve crimes, because that's putting the police departments under the same kind of occultic power and control that my parents were under. This is a horrible thought, just horrible to me.
Well, it is. I'm sure the police want to find the culprit. They have no clues at all. And here's somebody who can come in and actually, by tapping into the other dimension, can actually come up with the clues and help them solve the crime. I understand why the police would be drawn into this. But, of course, they've forgotten about biblical, commandments that we are not to have anything to do with the other dimension. And God understood that. He understood how appealing it is, how interesting it is, but how when we tap into the other dimension, whether through astrology or divination or mediums or fortune tellers, how we're opening ourselves up, as you say, to demonic manifestations.
Yeah, that what you say just reminds me of something else. My father used it. What do they call it, a divining rod?
Yes,
To find water.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and you really can, the thing is that it works, but the thing is you do
work.
Know.
I saw it work.
Right. Oh, I can remember when I was 12 or 13, somebody gave me a divining rod, and we walked around, and when you come to a point where there's water, suddenly this branch simply rotates in your hand. You can't control it. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. Oh, but this is not imaginary. There is another dimension. Certainly people tap into this. Certainly if you've never heard my interviews with Joanna Michelson, we actually have a four-tape set called The Supernatural. We carry her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil.
If I may interject here, Dr. Stan, was she able to get out of the occult at some point?
Yes, certainly. Basically what happened was her sister kept telling her, this is demonic. And Joanna kept saying, how could it be demonic? Why are we curing people? We're curing people with incurable diseases. We're making the blind see, the lame walk. I mean, how could this be bad? And her sister kept insisting. So Joanna actually went over to Switzerland and spent some time with Francis Schaeffer, who had an institute there. And Francis Schaeffer straightened her up. And so then Joanna came back, and she had the names and addresses of all these people with a miraculous cure. She went around and interviewed them, and they were all demonically possessed. And that, at that point, why she realized what she was into, she renounced, of course, the gift that she had inherited, and ended up marrying a minister and has a wonderful ministry of her own. So we always enjoy having Joanna on, and we'll have to have her on again sometime real soon.
Yeah, I'd like to hear her. That's quite a story.
Well, it really is. It's certainly she's one of the amazing, amazing guests that we have. We have a lot of amazing guests, and you are amazing as well.
Your guests are very amazing.
She is certainly a wonderful, 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 wonderful ministry. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, neither your mother or father ever renounced the occult before they passed away?
Dr. Stan, to my great grief, they never, ever did. They went to their deaths and their eternal destination still rebelling against God. It's awful to think about. I don't like to think about it, but it is. God is just. God is righteous and God is just. But it's horrible because all the other people in my family, too, I'm the only one. It's astounding to me, but I was really seeking God from practically the day I was born, but no one else in my family has ever received Christ. I have tried, and their minds are just totally closed and totally against God. I think a lot of it is because of my father's cruelty, that my siblings have just said, well, there is no God. He's not good. Or if there is one, he's not good. He can't be depended on. He doesn't love anybody. And that's the only explanation I have. But nobody in my family has ever come to Christ. Isn't that astounding?
Well, it's so tragic, and certainly one reason I do what I do. And we talk about all sorts of interesting things, but we always get back to the spiritual aspect of what it's about, with the hope that at least some people will be curious enough, they'll begin to look into the claims of Christianity. And of course, we do carry a number of DVDs, whether it be They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, or certainly the other various DVDs put out by our good friend Pastor Billy Crone on so many subjects.
Yes.
But of course, the important thing is that people understand at the end of the program, end of the sermons, he always gives an invitation to come into a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, and this is such an important part of this.
And that's really good. And I tell you what the twisting that has been done with the music in this country is really totally satanic, and that rock and roll music affects the cells of your brain. It's addictive, and it's just the most awful thing that's happened in the music world in centuries.
Well, it's not only the music world, but it's the churches, and the fact that the churches have brought the rock and roll, loud, boisterous music into the churches, music that does not in any way honor God, is a great tragedy. And yet, of course, there's been an organized effort to change the music of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And believe there are demonic forces out there that would destroy Christianity. And I'd say they're doing a pretty good job. We got a lot of people who go to church. But I said, we don't have an awful lot of Christians in America. If we did, why, of course, this country would not be in the tragic situation it is today. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for our guest, or want to mention something about the occult influences in our society, and believe me, they permeate every aspect of our society. They're into our legislature, they're into our judicial, they're even into the executive branches of our government at the White House today. And those of you who've never read the book, the Franklin scandal about the pedophile ring that went right into the White House, and of course what happened to the people who tried to expose it, that's the Franklin scandal. We carry the book, we recommend it, and I hope you'll want to get the information. And really, this whole pedophile ring began in a place, a Catholic institution called Boys Town in Nebraska.
But I heard about that, and it was just horrifying.
Well, there are a lot of things going on that are horrifying, and what we have to get the people to understand is we're involved in a spiritual battle. The reason you're not hearing about these things is because the people who control the media don't want the public to learn, and basically our job is to get the information out. We've got George from Cincinnati on the line. Hopefully they'll be passing him over, and we'll have George with us in just a moment. Hi, George from Cincinnati. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I've been listening to you for the last 3 or 4 years. God bless you all. Every day has been a blessing. I've been learning something new for the glory of the Lord.
Well, thank you so very much. Go ahead.
I also rejoice to hear my sister there, because now she's my sister, our sister in Christ. And she has what it takes, you know, the spiritual stamina to speak, you know, and give her testimony. And I'm sure that there could be some witches and people practicing and young men and traps involved in satanic doctrines, listening to her and by her testimony being set free. I have two questions for her. One, a comment on Anton Levine. Is he still alive, that satanic priest from San Francisco, California?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, George?
Yes, if Anton Levine,
Anton Levine, yes.
Is he still alive?
No, he's passed away. He's gone to his just desserts, as it would be.
I know, because let me tell you this. He went to Juarez, Mexico, at the end of the 80s to do some initiations there with the narco satanic news. Remember in the 80s, you know, people involved in narco and drug dealing and satanic ritual. But for some reason, and I believe it has something to do with this, with that wicked man, Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, in the border with El Paso, Texas, became the most, if not the most, violent city in Latin America.
And I think, George, this is one reason why we're having increasing tempo of violence in the United States, because they've taken God and prayer and the Ten Commandments and certainly the Bible out of our schools. And when the Masons took, and they controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, and majorities of 5-4 to 8-1, when they took God and prayer out of our schools, they knew they were going to destroy the moral fabric of this society. That's what their goal was, to change us from a Christian society to a secular society, and they've accomplished
that. Just one more question for your guest, Dr. Brotherstand. How can we recognize that our church, a Christian evangelical church, has been infiltrated by satanic people, by witches? How can you know
that? What would you say to that, Maureen? The question is, how would the average individual know whether or not there was a satanic influence in their church?
The farther and farther that the church drifts from the Word of God, you can know that it is on its way downhill, definitely. If the practices begin to be humanistic instead of biblical, you can know, and an awful lot of the denominations that are well-known, mainline denominations, are actually apostate now. Sad to say.
I think
you can know, my personal opinion and very strong opinion is that when they begin to bring bad, wrong music with a heavy beat into the church, you know that that is satanic influence, for one thing.
I think that's really very, very true. And the other thing is, of course, when they begin to get into spirituality, they want you to begin to meditate. They want you to begin to focus on focus your attention on candles, or to walk a labyrinth, or to get you into a yoga, or all of these other situations where you begin, of course, to become introspective, begin to dwell and empty your mind out rather than first focus on.
Absolutely.
It is this whole idea of opening your mind, and of course when you open your mind, why demonic spirits are going to come in, and this is not imaginary.
That's really true what you're saying. Opening one's mind is just asking for trouble, and as you say, the all of these New Age type rituals and labyrinths walking and all of that, those things, that tells you right now that your church is not on the right path.
Okay, anything else, George, before we let you go?
Yes, well, just one more question to my sister. Somewhere I read that someone that came out of the New Age and witchcraft, there is a book in which they say that the Antichrist has a separated, a special day to celebrate the rapture of the church. Is that true?
Did you get the question?
No, I was not able to hear it. If you would repeat it, I'd appreciate it.
George, repeat that question one more time.
Okay.
I don't know if I can hear it. Can you repeat it for
Christian
me, Dr.
Jewish, a Judeo-Christian man, a Christian preacher, he was a Jewish, and he turned to the Lord. I believe he was the true prophet of God. He prophesied the war in Iraq in the early 1980s when this guy Hussein invaded Kuwait, and he said that the witches already have a day prepared to celebrate the rapture of the church, since it will mean that the Holy Spirit and the saints will leave the earth, and they all will be invaded by Satan and all kinds of demons.
But basically what you're saying is, of course, when the Christians leave the earth, why, there's going to be a tremendous vacuum here, and all, and figuratively all hell will break loose, and certainly that is the belief of many Christians, and believe that the people are waiting for the rapture. This is their belief. And certainly, I don't know whether we're going to have a pre-trib rapture or mid-trib rapture or post-trib rapture, and I don't pretend to know, but certainly when the Christian influence is removed from the earth, why, it's going to be a terrible time. Hey, thanks so very much for calling.
God bless you, guys. We love you, and we'll be praying for you.
Please do. God bless. Okay, fine. That was George calling from Cincinnati, and I don't think we've ever heard from George before, but he's been listening for many years, and what's really so exciting to me is that there are a lot of people out there that are listening we may never hear from. We'd love to hear from you, though. Just give us a call sometime. But anyway, of course, our guest has been Maureen, and I'm not going to give her a last name, but certainly she listens on a regular basis, and we love to have her and know she's out there. And she took her almost a year to prepare for tonight. It's difficult to talk about these things. Maureen, we really appreciate so much your getting prepared and telling us your story tonight.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I would like to thank you in return for all that you have done, the sacrifices that you have made.
Hold that thought. We'll be right there. Go right ahead, Maureen. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. I was just going to say thank you, thank you, thank you once again.
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
Continue holding our own, and if you're in a position to help, we'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It's as simply as calling us at 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family and get our four best tapes or of the month and CDs, and then get our monthly newsletter. You can simply get the monthly newsletter or whatever you'd like to do, whatever you're in a position to do. And if you're not in a position to help financially, then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection, because that's really what I think is keeping us going. And believe me, we are entering a very difficult time. Those of you who listen regularly know that we believe, and we could be mistaken, but we really believe that we're going to be involved in a war with Iran in a very, very short period of time, based upon what the information we're getting from people affiliated with intelligence agencies. And and certainly some of this is in the public venue. You can listen to our program a week ago. Tomorrow, that was Friday, so I've still posted up there my interview with John Quirk, who is 33 years in the intelligence agency, something like that. He's retired now, but he believes that the war will come by the end of this month or the first week of next month. I don't know whether that's true or not. But I do know that just yesterday, the Iranians announced that they've already constructed the large graves for the American soldiers who are going to die in the coming war. And you can go up on the Internet and see pictures of those grave sites. Now, I personally think that those mass graves that they're actually digging are not for American soldiers. Those are for all the Iranian women and children and men, civilians who are going to die in this coming war. They believe it's going to happen. I believe that they don't want to tell their people. And I just hope and pray that this does not take place. But remember, you are responsible for what your government does. If you don't speak out, now you may not be able to stop it, but you have an obligation to speak out. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. What are you doing at the present time to get the truth out about what's going on politically and culturally and ideologically, but most of all spiritually, because this is a spiritual battle? And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, and then you need to use that information. You can get our DVD, The Brotherhood of Darkness, and make copies and distribute them with our blessing, as long as you're not selling them. You can get the DVDs put out by our good friend Chris Pinto, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. There are three of them. They're very professionally done. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, and The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And then, of course, we hope that you want to get the information. You get one or two. And then, of course, you can get the Eye of the Phoenix is the third one. And then once you understand that there really are secret societies, this is not imaginary. The secret societies are real. The average Mason has no idea what Masonry is about, but it's about the Gnostic religion. Go to your encyclopedia and read about Gnosticism, because the Gnostics believe there are two gods, and one of them is Lucifer. He is the primary god, and if you give your allegiance to him, you'll get great wealth, and you'll get great power, and you'll get great fame, and that is absolutely true. But, of course, at the cost of eternal damnation. And this, of course, tragically, most Masons, you know, they look forward to dying and standing before the great throne of judgment, great white throne of judgment. The only trouble is they spend all their time reading Masonic lore or going to parties. They don't know what the great white throne of judgment is, but in the Revelation, you can look it up in your, and find out the great white throne of judgment is the judgment of the damned. And unfortunately, everybody in Masonry who does not renounce his oaths, his secret oaths, will stand before the great white throne of judgment. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.